With the loss of her voice, Henriette faced an uncertain future. But one thing was certain. She was absolutely driven to resurrect her childhood creativity in writing, art, and performance. I can't imagine how difficult that had to be. Did you know that you would get your voice back, or was this a massive unknown?
Well, I mean, I think everybody felt confident that I would get my voice back. And I started getting it back slowly, but it's just, so it was more of a hoping that it would come back fully. That was not certain to whether I would have some damage to the vocal cords that was permanent. I ended up working with a speech therapist who was incredible. She did Reiki on me. She showed me different relaxation exercises. She massaged me. She gave me vocal exercises to do. And she's really great at her job. But I think what was really important as well was that she paid attention. The humanity, you know, the contact was important. I mean, in fact, we became friends through the experience. That's how important she was to me. So.
So once you got your voice back, what did you want to do?
Well, I think there comes a time in your life when you really sort of reassess everything. And like I said, I'm this product of all these bumps and all these things. I mean, my father defecting and then sort of trying to figure all that out. And then I don't know, I was just on this track of achieving and going, check this off, check that off, go. And then sort of I lost my voice and I thought, oh my goodness, there's so much I haven't said yet. There's so much I'd like for people to know and so much that I think I really can tell people and share with people. And one of the things is that my kids are sort of really the most important thing in my life. And I had these three little tiny kids. And when I got sick, the most terrifying thought was not being able to raise my children, not being able to fulfill my responsibilities towards them either. And so that was a huge consideration in my path towards having my voice heard. And I really also wanted to make sure that they were a part of it. I don't know if you want me to tell the story, how it actually all started. Would you like to hear it? Or
yeah, no, I'd love to hear it.
It's kind of a, okay, I'll try. I don't know if it'll be interesting, but I'll try. So in Germany, Halloween is not celebrated. It all started with Halloween. So Halloween is not celebrated as extensively as it is in the U.S., But my kids were these little fans. I mean, with me as a mom, they were these fans of Halloween. And to that came the added difficulty that at the time they went to a Christian school that frowned upon Halloween and found everything associated with Halloween pretty much sacrilegious. So we even had to go trick-or-treating in secret. And so when we switched schools, I promised my kids that we would do something very special for Halloween. And so what resulted was this gargantuan project. We ended up writing a screenplay for a 1-hour movie and actually filming it with 12 befriended kids. And then we had the premiere of the movie and everybody was excited. It was really fun. But the problem was that my kids wanted more. So that's when I started looking into publishing and how all that worked. And then we wrote the screenplay, the screenplay about Halloween into a children's book and published it, self-published it. And so at this point, everything was in German. So I was thinking, okay, how could we involve other kids? How could we also have this out in English? And parallel, I had set up the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then through the podcast and through Kulturium, I got in touch with a German teacher in Texas who thought it would be great for her class to translate the Halloween book. And so they ended up doing this. And that's how we published Halloween Travels. So the English version of the Halloween Abenteuer story. So it just kind of all came together. It started with the kids motivating me to do something, me wanting to finally sort of say something beyond my job, beyond what I was paid to do, what had the restrictions of an organization, something that was just mine, my community service, my private contribution to society. And then it turned into these little books. And then the story kind of goes on because my dad plays a big role in it now too. And COVID actually, because then the COVID lockdowns came and my dad started cleaning out their garage and he found a box of all my writings from when I was little. A lot of them were handwritten, stuff I wrote in my 20s in college. And my dad, bless him, took everything and typed it up and sent it to me. And then I had all these writings and a lot of it was good, was really good. So that's when I also said, oh no, I have to also publish these things. Even if I don't write anything new, I have to publish these writings that came out of me, that came out of my creativity, that, you know, possibly, I mean, it's always easy to say in retrospect, but possibly had my parents not immigrated, I wouldn't have had the opportunities I had through that, but possibly I would have been a great writer, you know, if I only had this one language to master, possibly, who knows. But I felt I owed it to myself to make these writings known. And because all these pieces were from different periods in my life and focused on such different aspects of who I am, I decided to then publish under different pseudonyms.
So. Now, are the writings mostly personal narrative? Are they fiction?
Oh, no, it's a wide variety of things. I mean, what I have decided to publish, I think I mentioned it already. One of the things was I wrote this novella, which was about 80 pages long. So it wasn't anything small or short or brief. That I wrote and dedicated to my first school in Texas. And so that's one of the things that I took. And it's just so, it is our immigration. It's how I live through the question you asked about how was it at school. It goes through all those experiences, but, you know, firsthand, how I experienced it back then. And then I thought, how could I make this into a book? And I thought, well, why don't I react to each chapter and write my views on it now, you know, as an adult. And so that's what I did. And I kind of decided to dedicate that to my dad. And I want to call it Life with Coach Pop. My dad was called by his athletes always as Coach Pop. So that's one. And that was very different. Then there were a set of love poems, 30 or so poems that were written. I won't go into detail but they were written in my 20s, and they're these love poems. And I looked at those and I thought, my goodness, again, some of them were really, really good, filled with incredible intertextuality, incredible feeling. And there too, I thought, how can I give this a framework? And so after thinking about it for a little while, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we also had the male perspective? So I tried to imagine how the object of my love felt or what experience he might have had. And I decided to let him speak through text messages and WhatsApps and sort of direct messaging and sort of modern modes of communication. And I that book is already published. It's called Paris and Chicago. And it's a back and forth of sort of the girl's perspective in poetry and the boy's perspective through dialogue and direct messaging, et cetera. So
great. Is Life with Coach Pop published?
Life with Coach Pop is not yet published. It's about to be published. It will be published this month for sure.
Oh, that's exciting. It sounds like incredibly interesting reading.
It is. And I was, my father also found my journal, which is written in half Hungarian, half English. And that's also very, linguistically, it's also very interesting because it goes from only Hungarian to English being dropped into it more and more. And then at the end, it switches into English. So completely into English, into very broken English, a lot of spelling mistakes. And so I thought I would also just at least have a few excerpts from that as well at the end of the book for those who are interested in this development. I mean, this is firsthand development of someone learning how to speak English. And then he also found my diary there. I will share a few excerpts from that as well. A lot of it is very, very personal. For example, you know, it goes into my parents fighting. Of course, they hadn't seen each other for 2.5 years and had to also reconnect and go through their conflict management. And so those are interesting as well. Yeah, so absolutely. That's a great book. And it's also something that, again, had to be said, had to come out. This is something that has been in me for this whole time. You know, I tried to say my little bits with 13. And again, that too, my school was really excited. My teachers wrote such incredible comments and gave me really wonderful feedback and praised me for it. But there was just no time for it. I am the product of immigrant parents. I had to focus on the basics. You know, there was no time for such frivolous.
You know, I find it so interesting. This happens to so many of us that we leave these interests behind when we're younger for more practical things, but they bubble up later in life. One of the ways, in addition to your books, you're doing a podcast now too, aren't you?
That's right. That's right. So the podcast is absolutely nonprofit, and it's meant to contribute to general education and unity and understanding. And I realized that I had all these different languages that I speak fluently, and I just thought it was a pity for me not to let others benefit from that. I have the ability to reach across so many cultures and speak to people directly. And also through my studies and having lived in different places and having worked and researched in different areas, I also have knowledge that I can apply to such a range of different fields. You asked me, for example, about medicine. I mean, even though I myself didn't want to become a physician, I do have, through my degree in human biology, through having studied pre-med, also through being married to a doctor, but And having taught actually medical students, I do have an interest. I do have an interesting way of asking questions from doctors and specialists in the medical field, and that from different experts from different fields. And so that's why I decided to interview experts from all around the world and to allow my listeners to discover different fields of interest and different lines of work through their eyes. And I guess the leitmotif, if you will, the central question that keeps reoccurring and trying and tying it all together. I try to focus a lot on language and culture and identity and how these different experts experience this in their life and in their work.
That brings up an interesting question. What is your favorite language and why?
Oh, that's mean. Okay, I will answer very honestly. My favorite language in the whole entire world is French because I love the melody of it. I love the way it makes me feel. I love the way it sounds. I love the way it rolls off your tongue. I love French literature. You know, when we cross the border into France, I stand differently. For me, France is magical, and the French language is magical. I love French songs. So everybody thought I'd end up in France, but just somehow, isn't that funny as well? How things turn out. I didn't end up in France, but so French is my absolute favorite language. English is the language that I feel most at home in. I think I can, maybe I'm most eloquent in English. I can for example, I write in English. I can't imagine writing in a different language. Everything else is then translating in my head. Then Hungarian is my language for family, even though my husband doesn't speak Hungarian and my children don't speak Hungarian. If I'm really angry, it comes out in Hungarian. also, there are terms of endearment that I still use for my children. And it is still, there is something very special about Hungarian for me. I have a lot of Hungarian friends that I've met here in Germany, and it's very interesting how quickly we become friends. We have this language that ties us together, and so there is absolutely, I have a very close relationship to, I have a lot of emotion towards the Hungarian language. Then, German, I guess, would be the next, and German is just, that's where I live. This is the language that I use, but it's more practical. I don't really have, I don't really feel the German language. I can use it. I'm always quite insecure. When I do interviews in German, oh my goodness, I'm sweating it through. I mean, all the way through. It still requires me to concentrate quite a bit more. With interviews in German, for example, I have to write my questions down. I can ask follow-up questions, but I have my questions formulated first. Go ahead.
No. And this is just fascinating, but how does language start to play into one's cultural identity?
How does language play into one's cultural identity?
Or can you have different pieces of yourself that simply relate to different cultures, and somehow they come together to form this wonderful, unique combination?
Well, you know, I guess that's the big goal and focus, but also the big conflict of my life. And when you ask about sort of when I wanted to have my voice heard, it was this combination. I think that I do have a different worldview. I do have a different take on things, if you will, through all the different languages that I speak. And I don't want to get political in any way. The podcast is not political and I'm not political. But I think, for example, world politics is also, I understand it differently, I think. Whenever there are conflicts in the world, the different languages, the different fractions, the different groups that I know have different takes on it. And that allows me to kind of, it allows me to see the big picture. So absolutely. And that's something that I really wanted to give back. But you know, on a more practical level, there are, of course, you associate different things with different languages. For example, and this is kind of a funny example, I cannot, and I told you that German was not one of my strongest languages, even though I speak it fluently. I cannot renovate a house in any other language but German. All the terminology that relates to drywalling and plastering and all the renovation, the vocabulary for renovating, but also sort of what you have to pay for tax and, you know, all the entire package around the house. I've never bought a house anywhere but in Germany, and I've never renovated a house anywhere but in Germany. So all that, for example, is very closely tied to Germany and to the German language.
Now, you do your podcast in multiple languages, too. What has been your favorite podcast?
You mean my favorite podcast episode?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when every time I do an episode, that's the one I'm excited about. So I think that's always the greatest. There's so many. I really, seriously, every single episode has given me so much. First of all, I've gotten in touch with friends from around the world. I've also rediscovered my friends and realized what experts they have become. So that's been really fun, reconnecting with friends. But I've also had, through the podcast, the opportunity to interview unbelievable people who are so well-spoken, so interesting. One of my favorite episodes, if you're going to twist my arm and I have to pick one, one of my favorite episodes is with the CEO and director of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. His name is Julian Zugasagoitia. He's Mexican, but he studied in, he himself has a very interesting background. He studied in France. His family comes from Spain, has ties to all over the world. His mother is a really famous soap opera actress in Mexico. His sister is a famous ballet dancer in Russia, or Russian trained. I mean, he has an incredible background already. He used to be the director of the Museo del Barrio in New York, etc. And the reason that episode was so fascinating was because he also speaks four languages. And in the episode, not only does he go into art and his views on art and his views on museums and also about details about the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art in Kansas City, but we were able to also switch back and forth. We went from English to French to Spanish to German. And that's just such a fun experiment to see how our voice changes, how our body language changed, how comfortable or uncomfortable we felt, what thoughts came to mind, what we ended up talking about. So that's one of the things that also I find really fascinating.
Where's your podcast going from here?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Where's your podcast going from here?
Ah, that's a great question. Well, you know, we're saying that we're in season two. So I had the first season, which were the first 19 episodes. And now I've had 6 new episodes. I don't know. I think that I'm going to have to grow with it. You know, I think there is no definite plan. I really enjoy doing what I'm doing right now. What I did was, like I said, initially in the first season, I mixed languages. So the episodes are mixed. In some episodes are in 2 or 3 languages. And what I'm doing in the second season, if you will, is that I'm bringing out an episode in each language. So, for example, I had an episode on to be or not to be Hispanic, or ser o no ser hispano. And this episode, I mean, of course, my interview partner also speaks Octavio Hinojosa Mayer. He speaks Spanish and English fluently. So we were able to actually do the interview in both languages. And that's one of the aspects of the podcast that's new, that you can listen to the interview in English, and then you can listen to the interview in Spanish, and completely different things are said. We talk about different things. With other languages, there's, for example, an episode on Muscadet wine. That's one of the things that before the podcast, you and I connected through Muscadet wine and oysters. And that episode my interview is only in French, but then I went ahead and thought about what was said and what I wanted to add to it in English. And so I review the entire episode in English one more time and include some quotations in French, which I also then translate. So that's one of the developments that I've implemented now in this new season. I also added a segment called Kids Ask, which is really, really exciting. So kids, I approach different groups of kids from around the world and allow them to ask the experts that I'm interviewing their own questions. And so far, I've had Argentinian kids asking Harvard professor Chad Cowan questions. That's been really, really fun. I've had a group of Hungarian kids from a Hungarian elementary school asking Senator Rabe. He's the Senate, the school senator, senator for education here in Hamburg. That's been fascinating. I'm working on one right now where German gymnasiums, so fifth and sixth graders, are asking Darian Akins, he's the general consul here to the United States in Hamburg. So that's a really, really fun segment. And the other segment that I've added is Dr. J's soapbox, because I just thought, I wanted to talk about things that aren't going to make a great episode or are not enough for an entire episode, but are really fun facts or things, thoughts that I'm having. So, for example, I did one on my most embarrassing mistakes in German. And I just thought this would be fun to share with my listeners. So where am I going? I'm not sure. I think it's gonna have to develop, but it's gonna stay with this focus, like I said, with this leitmotif, you know, language, culture, identity, and different fields, different experts, different people from around the world.
Well, what advice would you have for a young person trying to figure out what to study? Would you advise them to go the route of something practical, or would you advise them to follow their heart?
So I'll repeat that in case you want to cut it out. I couldn't have done that if I hadn't focused on sociology with my dissertation on sociology, and so I think that whatever you study, do it well and do it with dedication.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.